I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
This portion of the Final Edition Radio Hour is sponsored by...
Your baby is the most important person in your life, so why not let him know that? With diamonds. At Pre-K Jewelers, we offer a fine selection of high-end bracelets and pendants that are just right for a child in the pre-memory stage. Will he put it in his mouth? Of course. He's a baby. But even if he swallows them, and he will, our indestructible fair trade diamonds will turn up in your son's Huggies within 48 hours. So ask yourself, do you love your baby or not? Because when we love something, we buy it diamonds. Pre-K Jewelers. If you don't buy our jewelry, we'll find some better parents who will.
Watch out, PETA. Here comes Mita. Steak sauce and whiskey flowed like water in Dallas's Morton Steakhouse last week to celebrate the founding of the first grassroots carnivorist organization in U.S. history. META, Men for the Edible Treatment of Animals. Stone Peck has the story.
Men for the Edible Treatment of Animals is the brainchild of a gang of fur-clad young Texans who, for security reasons, only use their first names. Guys, introduce yourselves to our listeners.
Al.
Cal.
Dale.
Kent.
Mo.
Bull.
Cal.
Butte.
Bob.
Lim.
Kit.
And I'm T-Bone, president of META.
Yeah! T-Bone, explain how META came about.
Well, carnivorism is on the march in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The relentless rise of jackbooted vegetarianism and the deafening whine of goose-stepping animal rightists is finally causing an equal and opposite reaction. This here's our manifesto. One. We promote the hallowed American tradition of killing and eating four-legged animals with mothers and faces.
Yes, sir.
Two, we friggin' hate militant veggie cucumber humpers and animal rights pussies. Three, we friggin' hate the mushy, slushy, granola-munching jerks in the veggie propaganda duped media. Four, we friggin' love cooking, ripping, tearing, slicing, chewing 33 times and swallowing meat in all its glory. And the rarer the better.
Bring on the meat!
Undercover carnivores have been making things hot for the veggie left with clandestine ops like spraying spinach fields with E. coli, and public acts of resistance like throwing gravy on naked PETA demonstrators. President T-Bone says it's time to ramp up.
With our fleet of converted fire trucks, META can now spread mayhem wherever the enemy swarms, like anti-hunting rallies and veggie-dense green markets. Okay, boys. Let her rip.
Oh, my God. It's not water. It's chicken bouillon.
T-Bone, isn't chicken bouillon pretty tame stuff by META standards?
Red-eye gravy clogs the pumps. Works, though, don't it? Look at them cucumber humpers run.
But META has longer-range goals. META's Minister of Information, Butte.
We gotta change the narrative. PETA peddles this crap that vegetarianism has been essential to human survival. Pardon my French, that's bull balls. Meat has fueled Homo sapiens success since day one. Meat equals bigger brains. Meat equals fire, beer, and ultimately, the Porsche Carrera GT. Our species eats all other species. End of story.
In the few weeks of its existence, META has spread like kudzu. And like any militant organization, META already has rival camps. T-Bone explains.
We hardliners look down on the omnis, stupid omnivores, granola-munching pussy compromisers. But we hardliners have split, too. There's meatitarians who only eat meat-bearing animals. Then there's hardline folks who only eat their young. They're called vegans.
Here in the Bible Belt, Mita also has religious overtones. At their apocryphal first meeting in Dallas's Morton Steakhouse, Mita chaplain Kale preached to the converted.
Brothers! Meat is God's greatest gift to man.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Proof! When Jesus took bread and wine at the Last Supper, he didn't change them into soy burgers and a wheatgrass smoothie.
Amen.
Amen. He
Amen,
changed them into his flesh and blood.
Finally, PETA had better watch out. There's one secret cell in Mita with a very carnivorous mission. Actually, it's not that secret. It's...
Kent!
Bo!
Bob!
Bam!
Bam! Fill us in on your mission.
These animal rightists better know how crazy we meat eaters can get. We'll eat anything with a face and a mother. Now, vegans are just walking bags of meat, right? Grain-fed, organic, antibiotic-free. Catch my drift?
I think I do, but I don't think I want to. What's the name of your fairly secret cell?
The PETA Eaters!
Yes, sir!
Yes, sir!
Accident from recurring, President Obama announced a bold new plan to develop a fireproof Koran.
Last class. All right, welcome to MESL, Michigan English as a Second Language. As you know, all the residents of Michigan have to take this class because the Speaker of the State House of Representatives, Jace Bolger, has decreed that vagina is no longer an acceptable term to describe that portion of the female anatomy.
What portion is that?
The vagina portion.
How much of the vagina constitutes a portion?
Half?
Three quarters.
Well, doesn't it depend on the vagina?
Class! This is repression, not the metric system. Anyway, the speaker banned Representative Lisa Brown from speaking on the floor of the House because she said she didn't want government in her vagina.
Excuse me, I have a question.
Yes.
How much government does the speaker want in her vagina?
Could you tell us the Michigan government-to-vagina ratio?
If they want smaller government, don't they want smaller vagina?
Class, this is MESL, not OBGYN. All you need to know is you can no longer say vagina in the state of Michigan.
No more vagina. What can we say?
I'm glad you asked. You can say euphemisms, or what are being called vaginal alternatives. I have some new ones I'd like to share. Instead of vagina, please say, gaping legislative chamber.
Gaping legislative chamber.
Constitutional hole.
Constitutional hole.
Red state.
Red state.
Silenced clam.
Silence of the clams.
Michigash.
Michigash.
Republicunt.
Republicunt.
Geo-pussy.
Geo-pussy.
Clit tea party.
Clit tea party!
And my personal favorite, George W. Bush.
This has been a public service announcement by the Greater Michigan Council for Labial Literacy.
In our series on First World Problems, the final edition presents Shame of the Family. Reporter Stone Peck has that story.
The Great Recession of 2007 halted many plans people had for their families. One such household is the Richardsons of Manhattan's Upper West Side.
Well, we laid out, I thought, a pretty realistic budget for getting Laura through college, but, you know, now, of course, everything's on hold.
How old is Laura now?
Almost 9.
Oh, then you still have a lot of time.
Well, not really. 9 is getting a little old for a cat.
Laura is a gray and white striped domestic short hair. upon whom David and Mandy Richardson had placed a great deal of hope and expectation.
I mean, a cat has a brain the size of a walnut. How do you explain to her that she...
She can't go to the good daycare center anymore.
Right, the good daycare, and we can't afford the Swedish veterinarian who's outside our coverage network.
And we can't afford riding lessons now.
You put your cat on a horse.
Well, I couldn't say no to her.
Childless middle-class pet owners are in a desperate situation. Mavis Hitchens of Bernal Heights in San Francisco can no longer afford simple niceties for her 20 cats. And she says the government and social service agencies are simply ignoring her.
There has never been a time, ever in history, anywhere in the world, that has been as hard as it is right now for me. 10 years ago, I could pay to put them all in decent wedding gowns and bridesmaids' outfits, and I could still get the kittens properly baptized. Now look at them all, pitifully walking around in last year's shoes.
Would you say that this is worse than the Holocaust?
Yes.
When asked about cats in the middle-class safety net, Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, gave this exclusive response to the final edition.
Who is this?
So what do we tell our pets in this era of diminished expectations? As kittens, they were raised to believe they become whatever they set their minds to. Now, they are cats without futures. Lying in the sun, chasing laser pointers. Useless. This is Stone Peck for the final edition.
Recent nationwide strikes protesting austerity measures in Greece actually increased Greek productivity by around 5%.
This portion of the Final Edition Radio Hour is made possible by a grant from NetPets.
Announcing NetPets, fractional ownership of your very own travel companion. Your leased NetPet will join you on your private jet for as many hours a month as you desire. Always ravishing and medically certified, your NetPet will make those long hauls to Europe and Asia a whole lot shorter. Yeah. NetPets come in male and female models, or both, for the adventurous. For real savings, we also offer fully reconditioned, pre-owned NetPets. And of course, at the end of any lease, there's always the option to buy. P.S. Billing will appear on your credit card as Jet Snacks Incorporated.
Though red states feel uncomfortable with same-sex marriage, some conservatives have found something they do like. Our Pepper Lewis reports.
Merton Earle and his friends in the town of Placid, South Carolina, were complaining about gay marriage when they had a revelation.
Well, we were saying if I could marry another guy, I could marry a giraffe, or I could marry a toaster, or I could marry my shotgun. And then I realized I could marry my shotgun.
Merton's parents said they were shocked when their son announced he would marry a 22-inch Browning A-Bolt 12-gauge with a 3-inch chamber and a satin walnut stock, but they've since come to accept it.
They're always together. He's got a million photographs of the thing.
And he talks to it.
He does. For hours. And you know, I think this sort of gun love runs in the family.
I experimented a little in high school.
But Merton's friend Tateman says he's having a hard time dealing with this.
It's one thing if two men get together and they know what they're doing, but is a gun really aware it's making a lifetime commitment? Is this altogether fair to the gun? Oh, who am I kidding? I was in love with that gun, too. Why didn't I speak up first?
We're here at the ceremony where Merton and his gun are taking their vows where they first fell in love. In a deer blind, covered in buck urine.
Do you, Merton Charlemagne Earle, take this gun to be your lawfully wedded gun? To aim and to fire, in sickness and in health, until it's pried from your cold, dead fingers.
I do.
Then by the power vested in me by the great state of South Carolina, I now pronounce you man and gun. You may now kiss the gun on the mouth.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
WBEZ, Chicago.
It's a new world. The factories are gone. And while this isn't your father's Oldsmobile, they're not building Oldsmobiles anymore, so even if your father hadn't left you when you were 8 and made you spend your life writing poetry about the trauma, he wouldn't even have an Oldsmobile. I'm Ira Glass, and today on our show, It's a New World, stories of people making do in the new economy. Act 1, our new thing. Diantha Stasis Friedman reports from Brooklyn.
Sarah Sparrow Biasetti is dressing for a meeting, or as she likes to call it, a meet. She carefully adjusts her wooden beaded necklace.
My friend curated a video retrospective of the 1970s, and I just fell in love with them. I think of them as like little individual bullets of vegetable life. I'd love to wear one of my skirts today. They're made from recycled fabrics picked up at the Goodwill. There's this maker in Bushwick, really interesting example of reuse, but we're on our bikes today, so I guess not.
We ride over to Third Eye, a shop selling handcrafted objects in Fort Greene. Sarah doesn't like to shake hands. She says it's an artifact of the days when people had to prove to enemies they were unarmed. So instead, she greets the owner, Ian Danforth, with a hug.
Great to see you. The shop is looking so great.
Thanks.
These wooden briefcases, they're gorgeous. I love the irony.
Thanks.
But aren't they, like, vulnerable to fire?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're made of wood, so I guess...
Wow, did you see what happened to that tea shop on Adelphi Street? Totally burned out.
Yeah, I heard, so...
So listen, my friends and I, we have this art collective thing, but we're also getting into personal wellness. We try to secure spaces, you know, make them stable in a kind of energetic and physical way. This is such an energetic space. It would be a shame if something happened to it.
Back at what she calls her office, the back room of a food co-op called Kai Organics, Sarah talks to me about her vision of entrepreneurship.
It's kind of a free-form business model where we don't so much work in traditional flows of capital from consumer to producer, but we insert ourselves into the process in interesting and sometimes transgressive ways. I like to think of it as just our thing.
For example, last year, Sarah and her partners, mostly art school graduates and indie filmmakers who didn't get the grants they wanted on Kickstarter, started talking to the many Starbucks stores now in Brooklyn. They came up with a novel plan. The stores would hire avatars, people who draw no espresso shots, who don't actually show up for work, but are nonetheless paid.
We think of it as a victimless performance.
That's Michael Wolkover, Sarah's partner in life and business. He's tall, with a bushy beard and a ubiquitous bicycling cap.
In one state of being, I'm working at Starbucks, doing the 8-hour shift, getting paid. In another, more physical state, I'm out making my images of the waterfront. Or maybe I'm down at the bar.
Michael and Sarah head up one of the many collectives, or crews, of artists, writers, and liberal arts majors who came to Brooklyn to pursue their muse and found that the arts weren't what they once were. Instead, they found a way to insert themselves into a stream of more traditional kinds of commerce. To dip the beak, as they like to say.
There are a lot of inefficiencies in the traditional business model, a lot of places where stuff falls off of trucks, and we happen to know a lot of bicyclists who follow trucks around.
Things are going well for Sarah and Michael and their friends, especially now that they've resolved a conflict with another group, based out of a weaving workshop. both groups were vying for opportunity along the gentrifying Atlantic Avenue. Fortunately, that conflict was resolved when the weaving workshop burned to the ground, killing two. For now, Sarah and Michael are happy with where things are.
We're not a traditional hidebound business. We let people find their own way, create their own models, whatever feeds their spirit. All we care about is how thick the envelope is at the end of the week. And of course, if people are growing.
Funny. I used to think I could make a living just by being myself, but now, forget about it.
Yeah.
Diantha Stasis Friedman in Brooklyn. Next up, a guy who hits people over the head and takes things from them. Stay with us.
An unexpected merger today between Pfizer and beloved fast food giant McDonald's sent shockwaves of excitement throughout Wall Street.
Hi, I'm a normal 21st century American male. I'm a member of the coveted 18 to 49 male market. Right now I'm in the sweet spot, 27. For the past 9 years or so, I've been happily parked in permanent adolescence, glued to screens varying in size from a few square inches to several square yards, catching permanent adolescents just like me, cavorted in familiar locations like beaches or offices or cars or campuses, performing the same actions as I do, or teaching me ones I'm happy to ape, and using the same words and phrases as I do, or using ones I'm happy to parrot, reassuring me that I'm a normal 21st century male enjoying the best years of his life. As the birthdays come and go, I continue to respond each day to the same limited stimuli I've learned to enjoy since my late teens. Sports, cheap beer, life-threatening food, speeding cars, violent mayhem, extreme versions of the female anatomy, and endless trivial variants of the very screen-based technology on which I am receiving all these stimuli. On occasion, for variety, the stimuli will include serious issues, emotional timeouts, if you like, patriotism, prepackaged romance, ancient tribal phobias. At work, my permanent adolescence makes me swing wildly between testosterone-driven impulsiveness and chronically uninformed indecision. I fall ever further behind my female coworkers in originality, productivity, and creativity. Luckily for me, the system is male-skewed enough that this will not make me financially inferior. But my total political ignorance means I don't realize the system's days are numbered. If I ever wonder, in the downtime between screens, whether the best years of my life have actually been stolen, that my true maleness, boundless energy, raw curiosity, rebellion, inventiveness, the need to question, are being relentlessly abraded into intellectual incoherence and social impotence, I hurry by such scary thoughts as if they were a graveyard, back to the familiar images of a non-existent existence where irresponsibility equals companionship, dangerous behavior has no consequences, and pain, provided it isn't my own, is hilarious. Hey, adolescence is fun! In America, what could be wrong with being forever young? As the years pile up, I remain in this state of suspended development, hypnotized by the familiar flashing pixels of cars, sports, beer, industrial nutrients, violent mayhem, and extreme versions of the female anatomy, until suddenly I turn 49. Just as suddenly, I realize I've somehow acquired two teenage kids, one of whom is about to become a member of the coveted 18 to 49 male market, and wears his baseball cap backwards, just like me. And both of whom consider me a loser and a zero. I suspect, with resentment rather than horror, that they might be right, that I have no real future. I'm far less fun and interesting than I imagined and was told I was by every available medium. That I am not powerfully built or burly, but morbidly obese. A political, intellectual, and social cretin without a coherent opinion in my screen-addled cortex, on the verge of divorce as the unemployed and unemployable husband of a working wife. My only remaining sexual release, self-induced orgasms brought on by lurid pixels of sex trafficking victims my daughter's age, being raped by permanent adolescents, just like me. Plus, though I don't know it, I have in a mere 24 hours, my 49th birthday, become uncoveted by corporate America, peremptorily ejected from the vast warren of advertising and marketing in which I have spent not just the best years of my life, but my life. So what do? I turn to Jesus.
This American Life was brought to you by religion and the military-industrial complex.
This fall, a new sitcom set in Milwaukee about two wacky people and the governor they own. Get ready for Charles and David.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Coke Industries Incorporated.
Give us any fact, we'll fake it. Give us any law, we'll break it. We're gonna make our extremes come true. Doing it Coke way, not as climate change deniers. We're right-wing nut suppliers. We're gonna make our memes come true. Doing it Coke way, there's no one we won't buy. Walker, Christie, even Herman Cain this time. There's no Coke blocking us. We make our own truth.
We've got the front groups.
We come off like lost shockers, but we're two rich Coke suckers. We're gonna buy all your dreams, that's true. And we'll do it Coke way, yes, Coke way. Turn government into a joke. We'll do it Coke way, yes, Coke way. Make the whole country go broke for Coke and Coke.
This fall, Charles and David, two kooky billionaires, try to make it on their own in Wisconsin. It's a tea party of fun. Check listings. Local crimes may vary.
Depression. The Republican presidential candidates agreed today to move the United States to Somalia.
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Darby Worley, Antoot Shell, Barry Lank, Kevin Janis, John Marshall, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. It was written by John Marshall, Barry Lank, Peter Sagel, Peter Kleinman, Jeff Chrysler, Paul Seaburn, Mike Richardson Bryan, and Tony Hendra. Visit us at thefinaledition.com often for daily doses of satire with teeth. Clean, bright, cavity-free, cute, killer, cannibal, teeth. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra and edited and engineered by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2012.